Hello, I'm your host Keith Smith, and this podcast is all about new business. Before we start our show this week, I wanted to introduce you to Jeremy Davis. If you don't already know him, Jeremy is a popular figure in the world of new business, and he's been working for some of the creative and branding industry's leading companies. What you might not know about him is that he moonlights on the comedy circuit and is a regular at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. Now, Jeremy's got a few things to get off his chest, and some of them are to do with new business. So we thought it might be worth giving him a virtual milk crate on Speaker's Corner and letting him loose. So without further ado, let's hear what's on Jeremy's mind this week.
You'll never see a new business person at a dinner party. Which seems odd, as we're meant to be the consummate networkers, able to strike up small talk with the most intimidating of C-suite executives while slipping them a business card and giving them the hard sell about the great work our agency does. Events are bread and butter to agency new business folk. Trade shows, seminars, conferences. But there's a reason dinner parties hold a special kind of dread for us, simply because we can't bear the thought of somebody actually asking us what we do. Not out of shame or embarrassment, you understand, but just because of the sheer tedium of trying to explain it. We've all been there. So what do you do? Someone will innocently inquire. I'm business development manager at a marketing services agency, you will enthusiastically respond. Now at this point, you just leave it hanging there. An awkward silence ensues as your new acquaintance gazes at you with a mixture of polite incomprehension and silent dread. And after a few moments of this, you attempt to plug the gap by explaining that you help the company find new clients. Oh, so you're in sales, they respond. Actual replies I've had at this point include, business? How boring. And you did 3 years at university for that? At which point you try to explain that although selling is a core skill for the role, it's actually far more strategic than that, and a crucial part of it is finding and refining the targeting and marketing of the agency to develop sustainable growth channels. At which point, the other party's eyes glaze over and they drift away, to pointedly ignore slash avoid you for the rest of the evening. It's much easier for lawyers and accountants, both of whom have an improved line of conversation for this kind of thing. For lawyers, this is, so what branch of the law do you work in? Followed by a supposedly amusing anecdote about how the questioner once fell foul of said law in some obscure technicality at the injustice of it all. Or for accountants, just a very rapid change of subject to discuss something less boring, like watching paint dry. My advice is, if you ever do find yourself in this situation, just say you're an accountant, and go pre-armed with an opinion about whether matte or gloss dries quicker.
For any startup or entrepreneur, I highly recommend doing that work on brand values as early as possible, because it helps. They become basically your North Star when you're talking not just about marketing messages, but who your investors are, who your partners are, who your employees are. Mm-hmm. You know, you always go back to those brand values and say, okay, who are we and what kind of message do we want to put out there?
Let's talk about sex. Not the actual event, but the common result, namely children. Despite the fact that humans have been reproducing for some time now, we still don't always take into account the financial pressure and strain that a newborn will put on the family unit. Failing to plan financially can manifest as pressure elsewhere in a relationship, and before you know it, the happy event is the root of bigger problems. However, my guest in this podcast is Andres Corin, the CEO and co-founder of a rather cool fintech company that helps young families plan and budget for pregnancy and the first and most important years of a baby's development. Andres has some great financial chops too. He was a VP at JP Morgan in the risk management division, and he worked there for nearly 10 years. Before that, he was in the Peace Corps devising microfinance solutions in developing nations to help provide low interest loans to families. His company, StorkCard, is part of a new wave of pioneering fintech companies, and in our chat, we uncover his marketing and sales secrets as he demonstrates why he's discovered a unique place in the modern financial world. Now, for something as common as every day, as couples having babies, the grim reality is that it's a huge financial burden, and it's a surprise that so many people still do it. Now, here's a scary fact for you. 24% of the lifetime cost of raising a child is spent in the first 3 years. Yet with childcare costs outpacing household income, the art of successfully raising a child seems to be dependent on your ability to manage your finances. Now, my guest today is Andres Corin of StorkCard, an ingenious suite of financial products and tools to help new parents navigate the choppy seas of raising a child. And I wanted to catch up with him to find out more about his business and how he connects with young families who need a plan, especially when we're in this tricky financial situation. So welcome, Andres. Thanks for sparing some time with us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I hope everybody in your orbit all fit and well.
Yeah, everyone's healthy and locked up tight.
Good. Excellent. Well, just to kick things off, you have a financial background in finances and stuff. And what's your take on what's happening with the economy at the moment? I mean, do you see light at the end of the tunnel fairly soon?
It's a fully loaded question because I think it's a health crisis that has an economic implications rather mm-hmm. than, pure economic, problem. I think really what we need to see from my perspective, what I'm looking at is what's happening in China, to at least see what will happen in China is ultimately what will eventually happen to us, I guess,
right. Yeah.
In terms of the recovery. And then on the other side, looking at what's happening in the US in terms of how they're holding up as a way to really say whether the light at the end of the tunnel is coming up. I mean, eventually it's going to happen. It's just a matter of, when that's going to happen.
Right. Sure. And of course, I mean, this kind of plays into StorkCard strength, I guess, doesn't it really?
Yeah, I mean, we from our perspective, as you alluded to, having a child is a major financial shock for people, and we've designed the product to help people manage a major financial shock and take control of their finances at a time when they don't feel like they have that same sense of control. And if Right. anything, the COVID-19 has only intensified that pressure.
Yes. And just in a nutshell, could you tell us, just give us a description of what actually is StorkCard, how it works, and how did you and Bruce launch this business in the first place?
Sure. So StorkCard is all about helping parents get the support that they need by making it easier to coordinate spending, save money, and plan for the future. And where we're starting right. is by reinventing joint accounts for millennial parents. The idea here is that there's a bit of a cliche to say that it takes a village to raise a child, but it's a true cliche. Parents rely on their village for guidance and support, but many parents find it super awkward to talk about money with their family and friends. So right. as a result, many moms and dads struggle financially and end up suffering in silence. And what our joint account is and how it differs is that it's a multi-user account that uses data to anticipate big upcoming costs and makes it easier for parents to coordinate spending with their and childcare costs with their support network, so with their family and friends. So what we're trying to do is give parents that peace of mind to focus on the joys of having children, rather than the costs.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, so it's predicting anticipating certain events. I mean, so for example, what?
So, what we would have is the first 12 months is very much almost a retail need. So looking at what items do I need to buy for my newborn, for my 1 month old, for my 2 month old.
Gotcha.
It's fairly predictable when you just from an independent perspective of I will need this product at this time. But when you're in the thick of it, when you're exhausted, when you're just struggling with the new overall shock, not just financial shock, but overall shock of being a new parent, you lose track of those things and that sense of control, that sense of confidence. So what we do is effectively tap people on the shoulder to say, hey, this is coming up. Maybe it's a new car seat at the 6 month mark,
okay,
to say that your child's likely going to outgrow her car seat. So here are some deals, some retail deals on a new car seat. But then later on, when you as you grow out of that first 12 month period, it's various financial shocks that come up, whether it be the cost of childcare when the parent goes back to work, or whether it be maybe school fees or the cost of holiday childcare as well. So it's all about just we're the radar for parents to say what's on the horizon, but also coming with a personalized solution to those problems.
Wow. So, I mean, it's almost playing the role of like a sort of a surrogate parent in terms of just being able to say, well, you know, this is coming out around the corner on our, you know, based on our experience or based on, you know, the data that we've got, is that the next thing that's coming along, you know, down the road is going to be this.
Exactly. This is why our product really mimics that village concept, because right now what parents do is they ask their friend, maybe who has a kid that's slightly older, okay, what do I need to expect? What do I need to plan for? Or they ask their family, what should they anticipate? What we do is expand that village by using a bigger data set to really get specific about what they need based off of their preferences and their demographics. And then same with calling on that village for support, whether it be, you know, expensive childcare. Many parents are relying on their family to provide regular childcare because nurseries are so expensive. But that just sometimes shifts the financial burden onto grandma. Right. So if she was connected to this joint account, it would make it easier for grandma to look after the child and cover those daily costs.
So a greater number of people can have oversight on the account. Is that the idea?
The parents are still in control, so they have ultimate control of what they can see in terms of spending and who has access to what money. But it's just a way to really say it's a bit awkward, again, to talk about money, about reimbursing people for smaller costs, but smaller costs add up.
Yeah.
So this is a way just to kind of say, okay, everything's all centralized and it's under the control and oversight of the parent.
Fantastic. Well, I mean, it's an ingenious approach to it, and it's obviously born in its it's of its time, given all the data and technology that we have. But I mean, in general terms, I mean, you mentioned obviously the cost of childcare and stuff, and I mean, why are childcare costs raising so quickly against household income? And do you think that, obviously, given recent events, that there's going to be some changes in this?
So taking the first question first, there's a couple elements that drive the cost of childcare and why it's so expensive. So when we talk about expensive childcare, we're really talking about the costs of childcare for up to 3 years old, because when a child turns three, that's when most of the government benefits kick in terms of the free hours. And so that's one way that government benefits kick in. But also in terms of nurseries, by law, they're only allowed for kids that are 2 years or younger, they can only have, or sorry, below 2 years old, they can only provide one carer for three kids. But when they become 2 years old, you can have one carer for five or six kids.
Okay.
So the kind of unit economics of it all is just naturally always going to be more expensive.
It's all front loaded, isn't it?
Exactly. So it's both a government question as well as a coverage perspective within the nursery. And I mean, caring for a baby is a bit more intensive than caring for a 3 year old, if you think about it. But in terms of the landscape going forward, unfortunately, I think that costs are going to continue to rise, mainly because supply is going to contract. So COVID-19 just all the nurseries being shut right now will have a severe impact on nurseries that are already struggling even before this was happening. So I think that a lot of nurseries are going to shut. A lot of nanny agencies are going to shut down because they were kind of a bit of a, maybe a mom and pop shop or just kind of a smaller endeavor. Also, Brexit will likely have an issue as well because a lot of childcare providers are not from, are out from outside the UK. Sure. So they'll either not be coming in or have to leave. So there'll just be a tighter supply. So I think that's just going to increase the price going forward as well.
Oh, well, that's good news, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when you look at the COVID-19, I think that you'll, I would expect that there'll be a greater push towards informal, regular childcare. So childcare with your support network.
Right.
Because, well, one is because childcare costs will be so expensive and there'll be fewer options. But also, at least in my community, there's been, and I've been, you know, hearing stories of this, that there just seems to be a greater sense of, a stronger sense of solidarity within communities as well, that, you know, we'll get through it together.
Yeah.
And a lot of families helping out other families. And I think that lends itself to families helping families out with childcare going forward. And not to mention the older generation is by force getting, adopting tech a little bit more now than they normally would. So they'll be more comfortable with maybe a tech enabled solution.
And streaming the baby cam, the nursery cam from into their exactly. house as well. Yeah. But
so, I don't think you can change diapers virtually yet. But
I bet every parent wishes they could though.
Exactly. The kind of bomb disposal robot.
Fantastic. I guess the interesting dynamic to add to all this as well, following on from what you've just said, is that, you know, obviously if daycare and nursery care tends to sort of, if the market is drying up or contracting, on the other side of it, on the bright side of it, you know, from what I've seen in the last sort of couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, has been the ability for companies to allow their people to work from home. And so people can be more present in their sort of kids, you know, their sort of child's lives and stuff. So, you know, perhaps we might see a thing where it's not quite so crucial that you know, or that parents can actually be more present and play a greater part in raising their children.
So I that's an interesting one. And I think, any working parent would probably agree with me that actually working home and taking care of your child are mutually exclusive activities. It's very hard to do both. You know, sometimes it depends on the age of the child, but
sure.
You know, at least my 5-year-old and 3-year-old, it's very difficult. What working from home does do is that it kills on commute time.
Right.
So if you're spending 45 minutes to get to work, 45 minutes back, that hour and a half now, if you, you're working the same amount of hours, but now you actually can spend the kids time with the kids then. So that's actually great. But I think it's still the challenges, even if you're working from home, balancing the work-life dynamic is still going to be a challenge for people.
Sure, sure. But I mean, perhaps there might be a facility in your product that says, well, you know, after 3 years now, perhaps you want to start building a home office with lockable doors and things like that.
Nesting locks, definitely.
But so, I mean, basically, you mentioned earlier about the fact that you've got these kind of associations and relationships with retailers. And sort of honing in on that slightly, I mean, when you first started the business, what was it like having those conversations? Because I guess they must have almost been like mini pitches or presentations to each of these retailers, you know, because they're quite sort of big names. I mean, were there ones that kind of just instantly got what you were talking about and sort of just the first ones to come on board? I mean, was there a very telling reaction from some of them?
Yeah, I think retailers over the broadly speaking, get the value proposition that we give to them. So our whole concept, again, in we use data to anticipate the financial needs of parents many times before the parent themselves realize they might have the problem. So kind of the forward-looking functionality. And that works same on the retail side. So they definitely, you know, see that value.
Right.
They, but the market, you really need to distinguish between the big retailers and the smaller brands or online brands. The big retailers traditionally are saying, okay, I see the value, but show me numbers.
Okay.
And, you know, the bigger the deals, the bigger the numbers. But the smaller brands really get it because they don't have obviously the same reach as
right.
Amazon, for instance. But we saw that actually it's interesting. So we went to a couple of baby shows, you know, these shows where there's a bunch of retailers and, you know, new parents come, you know, descend on the event, and they're buying tons of products and it's great, but you can have really good conversations with retailers.
Uh-huh.
And this was at a time when Mothercare, you know, went bust. And Mothercare was a big player in yes, that market for a long time. I mean, they took up half the event space, the event organizers were saying. So just as kind of a visual representation of how big they are.
Like Microsoft at CES or something.
So the industry is definitely in flux. Right. You know, this is common in a lot of industries in terms of the quote death of the high street. A lot of the high street players now, or people that are more high street than online, will be affected by COVID-19, no doubt. Mm-hmm. But I think it does open up opportunity for smaller brands. So that's really the opportunity in the space, is really bringing out being a platform for smaller brands.
Some of the challenges.
Not that we would be necessarily an e-commerce space, but really you can bring out the chance for smaller brands to really, you know, come out and shine.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, I see the logic there as well, because obviously, you know, there are some really good stuff sort of happening, you know, both from sort of food right the way through to, you know, sort of clothing and things like that in the sort of the online space that would never normally get see the light of day in the high street. So so I can, you know, obviously there's a great value in that kind of partnership. Now, I want to talk a little bit about your sort of customer base and the people that StorkCard is aimed at. I mean, do you have a typical kind of customer profile? I mean, is there such a thing?
Yes. I mean, we are open for moms. You know, we definitely see it as a product that moms and dads can use, and
right.
we don't obviously discriminate on that. Being a dad myself, I would want to use the product. But we do in our marketing, we typically tend more towards the mother space, only because the financial burden of having children affects fathers and mothers. But the second order effects have also an impact on mothers, in terms of what we see is that there's a disproportionate impact on mothers with expensive childcare, you know, and the barrier to going back to work, and there's a larger unfair impact on mothers versus fathers. So what we find is that most of our customers are women, not men, and they're about 27 years old, thereabouts, so slightly okay. under the age of the national average of the age of mothers. And actually, when we were always wanting to be a UK-wide product, we were always conscious that we don't want to be one of these fintech companies that only have their user base within a specific postcode in London.
Chelsea or something, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Shoreditch, just Shoreditch. Not that there's anything wrong with Shoreditch, but when we did a survey of our customers, actually we found that of all the cities that we are located in, London is 11th. So the
really?
Top five locations are Birmingham, Southampton, Liverpool, Glasgow, and Nottingham. So
wow,
yeah, we're pretty spread evenly across the UK, which is great.
Well, that's good. And I mean, obviously, you know, how old is the company? How long have you been going now?
So we launched the joint account in December. So we're 4 months.
Wow. Okay. So it's still early days then. But
we're newborn. You'd say. Or a toddler, I don't know. This is my dad humor popping out here.
Well, you need to. I was going to say you need to start growing fast now, and exactly. You know, obviously, this will be
start running, no crawling, running.
Well, I mean, in terms of you know, sort of reach of sort of the geography aspect of it, and you know, reflecting on marketing, which in itself can be a very expensive business. And there's obviously no equivalent of Stork Card for advertising and marketing budgets. I mean, what channels do you use to generate new business, to attract new people in? I mean, you know, things like advertising, PR, SEO, word of mouth, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we see, given that we are an early stage company, we are still figuring out what. There's almost every channel has its benefits, right? So right. We're trying to figure out what at this stage is best for us. So we're trialing out, and we're seeing a lot of great pickup from those channels. So now it's more about, I guess, optimizing. So we have done the Facebook PPC, social media presence, PR, and building out the SEO capabilities. Mm-hmm. We also recognize that in the parenting space, virality is pretty important. Word of mouth is very important. So we launched recently a brand ambassador program, which is doing pretty well. And then finally, affiliate marketing. So looking at partnerships with other trusted brands and organizations within the parenting space to reach more customers.
Gotcha. Yeah. And so, I mean, is there anything that you're kind of doing now that's different than when you first started? I mean, have you kind of learned in the short space of time that you've been going? I mean, is there must have been quite a steep learning curve in terms of, you know, you were talking about whether, you know, which channels to optimize and stuff like that. I mean, that's a pretty short time for you to be able to make a assessments on these things. I mean, was there much that you regret doing at the start that you don't do anymore?
No, nothing that we regret. Nothing so strong as to say regret.
Sure.
It's more in terms of kind of the nitty gritty. So, you know, what copy we used rather right. than the actual channel itself.
It's a tone really, of voice sort of stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And just getting that tone right. We really, before we even started marketing, we did a lot of work in terms of determining what our brand values were and that tone. So we did a lot. We knew what we wanted. It was just how to convey that in a copy. What we were always testing about.
It's not always easy, and I mean, you know, as an entrepreneur myself, you know, I know that you know, depending on the market, it very much the way that you sort of speak to people is very important, and it's not always easy to get it right first time. But you know,
for any startup or entrepreneur, I highly recommend doing that work on brand values as early as possible, because it helps. They become basically your North Star when you're talking not just about marketing messages, but who your investors are, who your partners are, who your employees are. Mm-hmm. You know, you always go back to those brand values and say, okay, who are we and what kind of message do we want to put out there?
Well, that's a great piece of advice as well, and I think that kind of works for any company, big or small. And you know, but I mean, if today you had a sort of a limitless marketing budget, which everybody would love, I mean, what tools would you use? Where would you go if money was no object? What would you use to grow the company?
Yeah, I would say, given we're still in, we're testing, there's a lot of positives, and we're trying to figure out what the best channel is to double down on. I don't think there's necessarily, we'd be ready to pour all that money into specific channels.
No TV advertising.
Yeah. One bad. Yeah, I guess TV probably is not necessarily what we would do. Or potentially, I haven't actually thought about TV marketing, to be honest. I think for us, given our demographics, we're talking content marketing to increase that brand value. And then obviously social media is just so important.
Sure. Yeah, social media seems to be very, very popular for yours, and in fact it brings me onto a conversation I had yesterday with a friend of mine, a guy called Dan Lambden, who runs or works at a PR agency called the Red Consultancy, and they sort of work in the world of influencer marketing, which is quite an interesting sort of concept. And I was talking to him about the sort of stalk card thing, and he basically said that it's a very kind of underserved area in terms of really good sort of quality content. I mean, is the influencer marketing something that would be, you know, that's kind of on your radar? Because it seems to be quite a sort of a good area to go for.
Yeah, we started. We haven't used them thus far or much yet. We are definitely looking into it. It's an interesting one because I'd like to see what happens to that world in the COVID-19 world.
Yes.
Because maybe this is my own misconception, but kind of influencers are a lot of, you know, going out and about and, you know, how advertising them.
Can't really do very much influencing at the moment.
Exactly. Like in your house, maybe you can do it. I don't know. It would be interesting just to see what happens with the influence of the influencer, so to speak.
Yes.
The influencers are big in the parenting space overall.
Right.
Again, as almost lifestyle, I guess, influencers, there's a lot of baby products and services out there. Less so on the service side.
Right.
It's more relevant towards towards products.
The retail side.
So we think that there is, you know, obviously, going back to my comment about brand values, provided that the brand values are reflected there, there's definitely a case there to tap into the influencer market. Mm. I would like to hear more about how that works with a almost financial related service or an app to see actually how an influencer would convey that message, because it's not the same product type. I think it's easier to do with products than services.
Yes. Yes. And obviously the stalk card is very, very much a kind of a long-term lifestyle product rather than just a baby grower or a car seat or something else like that. So, I mean, it's something that's with you for a long period of time. So, you know, it's obviously a long relationship and a very sort of long curve on that kind of relationship as well.
Mm.
Yeah. Definitely. But on a slightly sort of pulling back slightly, but I mean, you mentioned your ambassador program, and I was having a quick look at it. And I mean, you're still recruiting for ambassadors right now, right?
Yeah. You can go on our website, so storecard.com, and you sign up and you get your bespoke link, which then you can share it with your friends, family, NCT groups, other parents, and, you know, whomever you want. And you basically get paid whenever someone uses your link to download the app and create a store account.
Okay. All right. Cool. And so on the website, I noticed there was a reference to the store card village. Could you just briefly sort of explain how that works?
Yeah. So on what we're doing is, again, this is taps into the content marketing piece. This is where we'll be launching on the website. This is where we will be launching articles about relevant topics or blog posts, those kinds of or evergreen guides just to get you through specific challenges within those first, frankly, 3 years of parenthood. So really just providing information free to use, free to download, just putting out positive vibes.
And yeah, and that's nice that you do. I think that's you know, it's admirable that you do that, because and it's such a big change, because you know, it used to be that everybody held these secrets so close, and they were all part of the big sell and all part of the big reveal once you signed up and stuff like that. But I think, you know, half the ability to win hearts and minds of new customers tends to lie in the fact that you're able to, you know, to show them helpful, useful things that will get them through. And I think it's a great thing that you're doing there. It's a good idea.
Yeah. And so we're targeting, so parents, our customers, they have a financial problem, meaning that kids are very expensive and they don't know really how to manage that, but they don't really think, oh, I'm going to go look for a financial solution. It's not right. Like they're going to their bank to say, what can you offer me here? So they're looking for other kinds of resources to help them manage that. We obviously provide a financial product there, but we want it to be clear that we're actually helping and providing them not just our product, but other types of information and resources to help them through that process.
Right. Okay. Well, that's great. And obviously you're clearly a busy man with plenty to take up your time, but, and obviously you're suffering like the rest of us with, having to try and juggle the sort of home and work life balance. But, just as a, you know, for a sort of, something to do, I mean, how do you relax when you get the time? I mean, you know, what do you have, any kind of hobbies and interests and stuff that sort of take up your time?
Yeah, actually, I do like the arts and crafts side of things. Okay. I like to say that it was because of having kids, but I have to say that I was pretty artsy and crafty before that.
You mean making things?
Yeah, maybe, you know, illustrations, wood carvings, like cardboard robots, you know, anything, you name it. So right now my 5-year-old and I are creating I'm helping him create this kind of illustrated book where like each page would be a new chapter with 4 sentences and a drawing. It's basically one long improv sketch. So it's, I think right now the protagonist took a pyramid rocket ship from Egypt to Mars to help a stranded bear. It's like, it's a bit out there.
Wow, that sounds good. You'll have to get me a copy of that. That's sounds like a great story. Right. Yeah, sounds like a great story. But so anyway, well, now we come to the most enjoyable part of the show for our guests, which is the finale. And this is where you kind of get to tell us what you're up to, any forthcoming news, etc., and how people can get hold of you.
Yeah. So, like I said, our website is storecard.com. You can get some more details about what we're all about there. Our app is free to download, and it's available as on Apple and Android. Take a look, download it. We're here to help you baby-proof your money. So, and provide all that other, all the other information that you might need. Also in terms of the COVID-19 specific guidance or tips or advice, we created a bespoke email address, helpwithcovid19@storecard.com.
Okay.
For our customers, and really it's for anyone, if they have a specific question or comment or feedback on the product to make their lives easier at this difficult time, we're happy to hear from you and chat.
Okay, well that's great, and we'll make a reference to the website on our on the transcript of the conversation as well. So we'll make sure that gets out there, Andres, as well. But I hope this has been as much fun for you as it was for me. I do wish you all the best with developing Stork Card, and I hope it actually does become the kind of go-to gold standard brand for new parents, like Kellogg's Frosties was when I was a kid. But anyway, so thanks very much, Andres, and I hope to speak to you again soon. But thanks for taking part in this, and wish you all the best for the future.
Yeah, stay safe
and stay well.
So my thanks to Andres. I hope that Stork Card becomes a widely recognised and popular addition to any new family's planning. It's just a matter of time before Stork Card reaches his tipping point, and I really look forward to catching up with him in a few months to get a progress report. In the meantime, I'd like to thank Andres for being our guest and putting some of his valuable time aside while he's trying to juggle work and home life. I'd like to thank my co-producer Donna, our IT wizard and friend Matt Smith at Queegee Bow Design, and of course, Ivory Tickler-in-Chief Peter Banks for the music. We'll catch you next time around on the Fuel Podcast, when we'll be giving out more help and advice for communications and marketing agencies that have a vested interest in new business. And really, shouldn't that include you?